Talk Central is brought to you by CloudGate, a micro-mega company. All the power of a PC, the flexibility of Android, all at a fraction of the cost. For homework or play, available at takealot.com or cloudgate.co.za for only $1,999.
I'm Richard Verberg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central episode 119 for the weekend starting Friday, 9 January 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like Honey Boo Boo May Have Competition.
Some websites will publish anything.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about CES 2015, looking at our favorite products. We also chat about the fight between the DA and USASA over set-top boxes, and we pick our favorite product or app of the week.
That's right. First, we must pay the bills. We'll be back just after this.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Happy New Year, Richard.
Happy New Year, Duncan.
Thank you, thank you. Nice hot summer's day.
Without power again.
Without power, yeah. Load shedding has commenced. Thanks, Eskom. it's going to be a bad year when a lot of people are. It's a Friday, first of all, and a lot of people are still on holiday until next Monday. And when people come back next Monday, I'm really, really worried about what's going to happen with this electricity situation.
Yeah, when the economy kicks back into normal gear, it's yeah.
Anyway, did you have a good break? Did you have a good holiday?
Yeah, it was good. Quiet. Stayed around Joburg. Caught up on my thinking time. Played some computer games. It was good.
Good, good. What did you play?
Battlefield only. That's Battlefield and GTA 5. That's my choice.
Okay, on Xbox.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Okay. I'm looking forward to GTA 5 coming out on PC. I think it's coming out in February, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. We've had it for a good few months now. So.
Xbox One or Xbox 360?
Xbox 360.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And the graphics, they're good.
Very good. I've never had a problem with it. I mean, I've got a 23-inch monitor that I play it on, and even with Battlefield, I know you can get a much smoother experience on a PC, but at the end of the day, I just like to plug in my disc. If there's an update, I'll do an update, but at the end of the day, you just play, sit and go. So, no, it's still well worth checking out. I haven't yet seen a need to upgrade to the Xbox One.
Sure. I'm definitely going to get GTA 5 when it comes out on PC, although I suspect it's going to be quite expensive.
And make sure you play online. The online gameplay is phenomenal.
Okay. I'll do the single...
The storyline, yeah.
The storyline first, and then have a go. I'm sure they would have loved to have had that up by Christmas, so there must have been
a bug somewhere.
Development issues, yeah.
But the story mode is very good. You'll enjoy it.
Okay, great stuff. Yeah, I've been playing a couple of good games over Christmas as well, actually. There's a wonderful game called, I think it's called, promising titles and I'm forgetting names. It's a wonderful game set in World War One. It's made by Ubisoft. I think it's called Valiant Hearts. It is called Valiant Hearts.
Yes.
Very well worth checking out. It's not your normal shoot 'em up, but very good game. Worth the $10 or whatever it is on Steam. I think it's even cheaper than that. Anyway, there's not a hell of a lot of stuff to talk about this week, but let's get into what there is to talk about. And being the first week in January, it means it's time for CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas.
Although it's not called the Consumer Electronics Show anymore. It's now just called International CES. CES International or something like that.
I don't know why they've changed the name. I mean, everyone knows it as the Consumer Electronics Show.
Exactly.
I guess maybe they've got plans to broaden it beyond just consumer electronics, the fact that they're getting into automotive and all sorts of other stuff.
Mm, possibly.
Maybe they need to do that. But I didn't go this year, Richard. You didn't go over either. But we've been keeping a very keen eye on the announcements that have been coming out there from international colleagues at websites like Engadget and The Verge and all the others. And there's been some quite cool stuff this year, actually. The television front, which is where a lot of the talk has been in the last year, has been a bit boring, actually. I think the main talk there has been about this quantum dot technology. But it's been elsewhere that the real excitement's been happening. And a couple of products we want to talk about in the show today, and the one that I think got both Richard's attention and mine, was the new Sony Walkman. It's follow up to last year's model, the ZX1, the ZX2. It's really is a good looking music player, and it's got a lot of attention, not least for its price, which is quite high, $1,119, which in South African terms will work out to about 13,000 rand before taxes. So you're not going to get this product cheap, but Richard, would you get one? It's clearly for audio files.
Yeah, I mean, we had a brief discussion before the show started, and I kind of said that I can understand audio files spending lots of money on a player that plays high fidelity audio back through obviously very expensive speakers. But let's be honest, you know, if you have an iPhone or any Android device these days that can play music and you have a decent set of speakers, you're going to be very happy with the audio quality that comes out of it. Streaming music, you always have a high quality streaming audio, and even the music that you purchase now is 320k, you know, downloadable audio files most of the time, or 196, sorry. It's unless you can justify, or unless you're really irritated by the sound quality of anything less than FLAC, I can see why you might want to get this, but I'm very happy with my music player. I don't use my iPod anymore because my phone just does everything, and I think that's kind of the biggest competition. But this is a niche market, right? So I can understand that there would be some audiophiles that would love this.
Yeah, it's definitely a niche market. And I mean, as we were chatting before the show, I'd really, you know, if at that high end of the market, are they really after a product like this? Do these audiophiles not already have these high-end Marantz sound systems? Have they not already invested 100,000 rand in their home, you know, audio systems with the top-end speakers and all the rest of it? You know, do they need a product like this? When they listen to music, are they not listening? Are they not sitting down to listen to it in their beautifully constructed music listening environments? Perhaps this is for people who want to listen to music in the car, but if you're driving around, you've got the noise of the engine and other ambient noises, do you really need to get the quality that FLAC produces in your vehicle?
Look, unless you have a 3 million rand Banger Olufsen Mercedes-Benz kitted out, I'm sure maybe
for your DB9
exactly. Maybe this is just one of those technologies that was designed for millionaires. You know, if you have everything, what else do you get? That's just another toy, and it's good for Sony's brand because it could be the best high-end audio player. But look at Neil Young's Pono device that I think was announced.
He was also punting at CES.
And it's much cheaper. Doesn't look as nice.
Half the capacity though. It's only 64 gigs.
Sure.
Whereas the Sony has 128 gigs, which isn't that much, by the way. I mean, 128 gigs. I know a lot of people whose music collections would expand beyond that, especially if you're using uncompressed music formats like FLAC.
Oh yeah. Then you're only going to be able to put a few albums on there, I'm sure. I still maintain.
It's an interesting one.
Streamed audio through a decent set of speakers is going to give you a very enjoyable experience without breaking the bank. But I don't think we're the target audience. I think maybe for Mark Zuckerberg for his birthday gets one of those.
I don't know. I think streaming music's taking over the world. I think it's a matter of time before streaming music kills off CD and physical and download. It's a no-brainer. I moved over the holidays. I actually moved away. I was regular listeners to the show will know that I was a subscriber to Google Music, Play All Access or whatever it's called, for which I paid I think $7.99 a month because I was an early adopter. I cancelled it. I've moved to Radio, RDIO.
It
is actually far superior to the Google solution. I should have moved ages ago, and it's available in South Africa, and it only costs $60 a month for the full premium service.
Oh wow!
$25 a month if you want to get it on your desktop.
Well, what do you find better about it? Is it the catalog?
Social music discovery is brilliant. So you follow your friends, see what they're listening to in real time, all that sort of thing. And I also find the interface is superior. It's a Flash-based interface, which I'm not too keen on, but so was Google's. I think most of these services use Flash, but it's a beautifully designed interface.
Are you talking about desktop, not for that?
I'm talking about both, actually. I'm thinking of desktop because I listen primarily on my through my TV in my lounge, which is hooked up to my Sony home theater system, and it's a great. The web app is brilliant. And I've discovered so much more music, which I just didn't through Google Music. So I bring up an album, and it'll pop up similar artists. You click on similar artists, and you can see what other people have been listening. If you listen to a particular artist, it'll tell you, so-and-so listened to this 10 minutes ago or whatever. You click on his profile, you can see what music he listens to.
That's nice.
And there's so much discovery, and I've discovered so many new... I mean, I'm a huge fan of progressive rock and progressive metal, and I've discovered so many bands in those genres in the last few weeks. It's phenomenal. And it's cheaper than Google Music, radio. And the reason I was raising radio was that it also allows for variable bit rates. So if you're listening on your mobile device, it can push the bit rate down to 64 kilobits per second, so that you save expensive mobile bandwidth. But if you're sitting at home on your uncapped DSL connection, you can push up the bit rate to 320 kilobits per second. And as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I'm not an audiophile, but I cannot tell the difference between a 328 kilobit per second compressed stream and a FLAC uncompressed audio file. Yeah, I just can't.
No, I agree. If it's a good recording to begin with, if you got it straight from a decent source or purchased it or even streamed to download it, it's generally clean enough and good enough to use. Do you actually download? I mean, we were talking about the download options on these things. Do you actually download for offline play, or do you always stream your audio?
I do, and it's radio's got a brilliant option for that as well. You just literally click a button and you say download to your mobile device.
Okay, so it does.
So I can be on my TV using the web app.
Oh yes.
And I just click a button, download to my mobile device. Seamlessly in the background, as long as my mobile device is connected to Wi-Fi, which is something you can set, it just downloaded the thing in my... the music in the background, get in my car. Oh, cool, yeah, I downloaded these albums, let's listen to one of these, off we go. No mobile data at all.
Yeah, because that's where I see still the biggest need for storage capacity on devices, is to have that offline audio. Because in reality, we can't really stream all the time. There's nothing worse than driving on holiday somewhere or for the weekend away, and you get to a place where there's no reception.
Yeah.
You can't play music. But with the downloaded option, you can.
Yeah. Anyway,
But there was some other stuff from CES. It wasn't just the music.
Yeah, you spotted an interesting product from Dell called the Venue 8.
Yeah, it's...
I had a brief look at it. It looks very cool.
It's a very slick-looking device. I mean, it always looks like a very dark iPad Air, I think, with slightly harder edges.
It's a tablet, 8-inch tablet.
8-inch tablet, yeah.
The Venue 8. It looks, to me, when I first saw it, I thought, that looks a bit like an HTC, big HTC One M8.
Oh, you're right, with that speaker grill in front. Mm. Yeah, definitely. Mm. So it's just 6 millimeters thick, so it's slightly thinner than the
iPad Air.
It looks beautiful. I didn't see any pricing information online when I had a look. But, yeah, I mean, Dell certainly Android, seems to be... Yeah, Android. So another interesting feature is the fact that the camera on board will actually give you the adjustable focus after the fact. So like similar to the Lightroad camera, I don't know if you've ever seen that product.
I've heard about it. I haven't seen it.
Essentially, you can take a photograph. You don't need to worry about focusing because all the data it takes... the sensors of such a nature that it takes basically a photograph at each focal length depth, and then you can adjust the focus afterwards, so you can play with your photographs afterwards and then change where you want that focus to be. It's a nice feature. Lightroom still has been struggling a bit. I mean, they haven't really hasn't breakthrough to a mass market product yet,
but
it's nice to have. And it's good to see Dell really, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and bringing out products that not only look slick but have got some really interesting specs.
I must say, I'm actually very keen to see the crop of Android tablets that come out this year, because obviously they're going to be running Lollipop. And I'm keen to see how Lollipop stands up to iOS on tablets, because I've always felt that I've always had the view right up to the previous version of Android that it just doesn't, it's not quite the iPad. Even though I don't like that grid of icons necessarily on iOS on the iPad, I've felt that Android tablets have always been a bit of a second-class citizen next to the iPad. I think we might see that change this year with products like this one, possibly.
I agree with you, and we know that Lollipop's going to be an incredible operating system. It not only looks great, but in functionality-wise. So it's going to be very stiff competition this year.
That said, over Christmas, I did go and buy myself a little present in the form of the new iPad Air 2. Bought the Wi-Fi only edition, because my previous iPad, which I was upgrading from the iPad 2, I got the 3G and and Wi-Fi version, and I never plugged a SIM card into it, so that was a waste of money.
Yeah,
so Wi-Fi only.
If you have an iPhone, your hotspot feature syncs automatically when you need it.
Which is great. I saw that. And I've been playing around with that handover feature, I forget what it's called, where if your iPhone rings, also rings in your iPad, which is quite cool. But I have to say, the iPad 2 is an amazing tablet. It is an amazing tablet. You know, I haven't upgraded my... I mean, I can't remember when the iPad 2 came out. It was at least 4 years ago, probably more. And it was a spur of the moment thing. I thought, just let me get this thing. I wanted the Retina display mainly. I was getting frustrated. The post office wasn't delivering my magazines, and I subscribed to a lot of magazines. And they just weren't arriving, and I could get them all digitally, and they just look crap on the iPad 2 screen.
Also, so with the Retina and your MacBook, I mean, you get used to this.
You get used to it.
A smooth screen,
indeed. I went and got it, and it's brilliant. It is really thin. It's fast. It plays games that. And the graphics are amazing. It's that Retina display that really does it. And reading Time magazine or The Economist or whatever, and just seeing these images, they look better than they do in print. Good product.
And also the size of it. I mean, you don't really. I still have an older iPad with Retina display. This iPad 4, I think it is. But it's a little bit heavy. I find I even have to take it out of the case sometimes, because the case is slightly hard to edges. I've got an original Apple case for it, but. You almost want the slick feel of it, but light.
It's light,
Where mine's a little bit heavy. I find that I use my iPhone a lot more now for reading because of the high resolution screen on there as well.
Yes.
Things just read easier, I guess. Yeah. But you got the perfect solution with the iPad Air 2, being a small device like that. I love it.
Yeah. Anyway, the coolest product that came out of CES for me this year wasn't actually an IT product at all. But it has IT connotations, and it was launched at CES after all, so we can talk about it. And that's this Gogoro smart scooter, which has been under development for the last 3 years and has very quietly raised $150 million in funding in the process. It's an electric scooter developed by a bunch of HTC executives. It looks like such a brilliant idea. It's fully electric powered, so zero emissions. From the vehicle, to give you a couple of stats. It accelerates from 0 to 50 kilometers an hour in 4.2 seconds, top speed of 95 kilometers an hour. Not bad for an electric scooter. The really interesting thing behind the smart scooter is not so much the scooter itself, which I must say does look pretty cool. I'd love to own one. But it's their plans to roll out what they call the Gogoro Energy Network. This is a plan to have a depots around cities, where when you're running low on juice, you simply pull in, hand over your drain battery, and grab a refill for a small amount of money,
awesome.
Presumably.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you're going to have a lot of these. I'm just imagining how this might take off in Southeast Asia, because if you go to places like Thailand and Vietnam and these places, everyone is riding a scooter. And the pollution from those things is terrible. If you were to replace all of those carbon-burning, fossil fuel-burning scooters with a solution like this, it'll clean up all of those cities. It'd be amazing. It's a really cool looking product. I think the big challenge they're going to have is getting this energy network to sufficient points to make it viable to start to roll this thing out.
I think in big cities it will certainly happen a lot quicker, right?
It's a chicken and egg sort of situation, isn't it? Which came first, and how do you really kickstart it? I guess they're going to focus on rollout city by city. It's not going to be a case of buy this thing and then hope that the energy network is going to follow. You're going to have to make sure that energy network is deployed at the same time that you start to deploy the scooters in cities around the world. But it's a very cool idea, and I'm sure other companies are going to copy it. I'm sure these guys have also patented the hell out of it. Very cool. A bunch of ex-HTC executives. In fact, a lot of the funding was provided by the current chairwoman of HTC. So they're still linked with the company. I thought, like, there's any bad blood when they left.
But does it play games, Duncan? That's a question.
Oh, it does
run Android.
I'm not sure what operating system it runs, but it does run an operating system. It's got built-in features that will direct you to the nearest refueling depot, and it's going to be online. I forget all the details, but if you go and have a look at the Gogoro website, there's a link to our Best of CES story on Tech Central this week. You'll get all the details on exactly how it's going to work, and there's many more pictures there on the Gogoro website of of what the instrument panel looks like, and what the batteries are going to look like, and more specs on the scooter itself.
Yeah.
But for me, that was the hands down the coolest thing that came out of CES this year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's such a innovative product, and the way that they're going about it is very interesting. I think I hope to see one of these in South Africa soon. Hopefully we'll be able to.
Yeah, I'm guessing this is probably not their highest priority.
No, mode. Definitely not.
If these guys would no doubt want to go after areas that are, you know, cities that are big on scooters, and then South Africa unfortunately isn't a scooter using nation.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of countries in Southeast Asia, hundreds of millions of probably scooters in those markets. Rekha, do you want to talk about a coffee machine that grabbed your attention at CES?
Yeah, there was one of the other products that I thought was really interesting as a big coffee fan, coffee drinker. It's a coffee machine simply called Smarter Coffee Machine. Apart from allowing you to control all its features from an app, so you can set the type of coffee you want, how much coffee, the strength of the bean that you want crushed. But this machine can also connect to fitness bands. And then what do they say? Yeah, the machine which can sync to various fitness bands and can adjust the strength of the cups of coffee alongside your overnight sleeping data. So obviously if you have had a bad night's sleep, the coffee will be slightly stronger in the morning.
That's funny.
It's an interesting device, and this is the kind of thing I like to see from CES. It might not make mainstream, but one day we'll see more of these type of machines where you can lie in bed and prepare your coffee.
Yeah.
The only thing you need is a butler to bring it to you. We'll have a robot for that in a few years.
Yes. No, that's quite cool. There's so many of these things at CES, of course. Many of them don't even make news.
A lot of those products don't get made.
Such a big show. I mean, the 20 or 25,000 new products are introduced at CES every year.
That's crazy.
Only a few really make the headlines.
And if anybody wants some interesting weekend reading, go have a look at, there's some articles online about all those products that never made it to commercial launch. And there's some really interesting ones there.
Great. Well, let's move on a bit. I want to just chat briefly about probably the biggest serious news story of the week, and that was this, if the Hardy Dolls will pipe down. Thank you. Was the fight that erupted this week between the Democratic Alliance's Marion Shin, who's the Shadow Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services, and USASA, which is the Universal Service and Access Agency of South Africa, and the institution charged with dealing with the rollout or the subsidy of the set-top boxes that people will need to receive digital television. A bit of a war of words that erupted between the two parties, stemming from a statement that was issued by Marion Shin, questioning the tender process and whether it was being held too secretly, and whether the companies were being handpicked by USASA to attend briefings, etc. USASA hit back very quickly and very hard and said absolutely denied this, and went almost on a point by point basis refuting the DA statement. I think it's encouraging that USASA, which historically has been a useless, corrupt agency, has actually come out and been so vocal on this particular criticism, because it shows at least that there is actually something happening at USASA, and that I think the old USASA wouldn't have come out and criticized the DA statement, and I think that there has been a change of the guard at USASA, and I think that there is some positive things happening there. I'm hoping to meet with them early next week to talk about what exactly has been happening at the agency and what exactly is happening on the set-top box project. But I get the impression, the early impression, let me put it that way, that the things are changing at that agency and that the new management is actually getting stuff done. So I think it's right that the DA questions the process and raises concerns where it believes it has valid concerns that need to be raised. I think it's also fair to state that there appears to be a change happening at USASA, and if they are indeed moving in the right direction, which it would appear they are, then I think they also need our congratulations and support on that. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say on that.
But we still have a deadline looming, right?
The deadline is not going to be met. It's simple. It's 6 months away. It's not going to happen. It's June the 17th. The deadline being the for anyone's been on a round trip to Mars in the last couple of years, we've agreed with the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, that we will switch off our analog broadcasts by that date, after which we will not be protected from cross-border interference in digital signals. I think the biggest potential for cross-border interference will probably come from Botswana, which is quite well ahead of us now on this digital project, although they've, I think, mistakenly chosen an alternative digital broadcasting standard in the form of ISDBT, which is the one that South Africa entertained for a while. But they are ahead of us. So we could potentially see some cross-border interference, although I don't think it's really a massive issue. But yeah, we're going to miss the deadline. But it's at least good that USASA is moving ahead. Even the politicians are taking forever to get their ducks in a row in terms of moving this thing forward. And still, of course, there are the big questions about how MultiChoice and ETV are going to react to whatever the final policy says. But I think this is all going to play out in the next couple of months now, because the deadline year is here. We have to get moving. Anyway, let's move on to our...
It's a good thing we don't really watch too much terrestrial TV then, is it, Duncan?
No. In fact, I hardly watch satellite TV now anymore either. And let's move on to our regular features of the week. Winners and losers first. We don't actually have a winner this week. We racked our brains for a few minutes before the show. And we couldn't come up with anyone who we thought worthy enough to be named winner of the first week of 2015. Our loser this week, we mentioned it right at the beginning of the show, is Eskom. Load shedding is back. And unfortunately, we think it's going to get a lot worse this year. May, in fact, be with us for several more years until... some of these new power stations, particularly Madupi, and a number of those units at Madupi, come online over the next couple of years. So, Rechod, I hope you've...
got my battery stocked up, charged and ready to go, hopefully. And let's also not hope you were saying about Eskom running out of money very soon.
Yeah, a great piece in the Mail and Guardian this morning about Eskom running out of cash in 21 days. And this is apparently confirmed by the Minister of Public Enterprises. Lynn Brown and the company has been burning through billions of rand in the last few months, keeping the lights on by burning diesel.
Literally burning diesel.
At, I think the figure I read was 3 rand per kilowatt hour, whereas it normally sells electricity, it normally costs it 62 cents per kilowatt hour to generate electricity through its coal-fired power stations.
Sure.
So 3 rand versus 62 cents, and you can see you're on a hiding to nowhere. You know, it's a difficult one. Do you carry on burning diesel? Does the government use taxpayers' money to give to Eskom to continue burning diesel to keep the lights on, or do we go into a load shedding situation?
Which is worse? Which is going to have the worst effect? Yeah, that's the question.
Yeah, indeed. I don't know. I mean, economist would be a better place to answer that question. Mm. But we're in very deep doo-doo in this country, I'm afraid.
You all more reason to get those Gogoro smart scooters, I think.
Indeed.
You may not have lights, but we can drive around.
In fact, I'm sure a smart entrepreneur here in South Africa is already on it and is having discussions with them about bringing it here for that exact reason.
And thinking of Africa, we'll retrofit existing bikes with batteries.
Yeah.
Could work.
The only problem is with those smart scooters, they need to be charged.
Yeah. Fun. We'll go for some power.
Cool. Apple product picks of the week. You've got we both products this week. No apps.
Products.
You've got a nice little toy to play with over Christmas. What is that?
So we've mentioned this in our picks of the year actually, but I only started playing with it in December. It's called the Olloclip for the iPhone 6. And it certainly is. If you're a photographer, you enjoy taking photographs. This is probably the best product you can buy for your device, for your smartphone. In South Africa, obviously, I don't know if the Samsung version is available. I know that Olloclip has manufactured them for the Samsung S5, I think it is. In any case, if you're an iPhone user for iPhone 5 or iPhone 6, what you do is you just slip. It's quite easy. It's two lenses on a little clip that slides over your phone.
Okay.
There's a little gap there, and that slides over the back lens. And one of the nice things is the front lens and the back lens lines up. So you don't have to really change lenses if you want to change the functionality of it. The one lens is a fisheye and the other one is a wide angle. And very interestingly, and one of my favorite features is you can remove the lens. You can unscrew it to turn it into a macro lens. So not only do you have fisheye wide angle, you have two levels of macro from one little clip. It comes with a lanyard. You can hang it around your neck. But truly, the photographs that I've been able to take with this thing is nothing short of amazing, because you all of a sudden have I'm just a really good set of lenses at your disposal.
I'm just amazed at how close you can get to a subject. I've just put it across an iPhone 6 here, and it's remarkable how close you can get. I'm literally a centimeter from a subject, and it's...
Doing group photographs with people and family over the holiday period, I found the normal wide angle lens should almost be the standard, because it doesn't curve much on the edges of the screen, but it creates a nice enough wide angle to fit a number of people in.
Yeah, I'm just trying a selfie over here. I'm going to take a selfie, in fact, of Rechad and myself. There we go. That's amazing. I've just literally haven't pushed my arm out all that much, and both of us are in the picture. We're not sitting particularly close to each other. Plus, there's plenty around us as well, so that's very cool.
Fisheye lens, you can do a lot of interesting shots. I've done some architectural stuff with it, some indoors. It was great. The only downside is if you do have a cover on your iPhone, you need to take it off, because the clip does have to fit snug over.
Yeah.
The macro feature, it turns any subject into something really interesting. So you can literally, if I can show you there quickly, sure. Duncan,
we need video for this podcast today.
Now you have to go really close. So I've just unscrewed the back of the lens.
Yeah.
You need to switch or flip your camera around.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And now, I mean, if you go up to this grain of wood, you literally have to go...
Oh, wow. That's amazing. It's literally... Yeah, a centimeter from the wood, if that.
I mean, if you do something on this newspaper, you should get some nice ink bleed. It could make for a really nice, interesting...
That's very good. Oh, wow, that's amazing.
There's some stock imagery there for the site.
That is incredible. How much does it cost?
It's about 1,200 Rand.
That's not bad.
But truly, if you're a smartphone photographer and you have an iPhone, there's no doubt that you should get this product. It really is good.
Just playing it with now briefly, it looks amazing. It looks absolutely.
The iPhone camera is good to begin with. Mm. I mean, we can't argue with that. And this just expands what you can do with it, especially if you do group shots of people. I mean, you can just put on the wide angle, and you don't have to stretch to get everybody in.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's brilliant. I picked this week, which may shock regular listeners to the show, that I'm a diehard Android user, is the iPhone 6, which I've been using for the past 3 or 4 weeks or so. It's a review model from, I think it's Vodacom sent it to us, eh?
Yes.
Yeah, so Vodacom didn't come and fetch it before the holiday, so I've took advantage and decided to try it, since I haven't really used an iPhone since the 3GS model.
Sure.
So it's been quite a few years, and I am very impressed with it. I'm very impressed with it. But there's a couple of things that blow me away. First of all, is how thin it is.
Mm.
It's the thinnest phone I've ever seen. It's remarkable. The second thing is the Touch ID is a wonderful feature. If you're used to locking your phone and having to put in a keypad every time or draw some squiggly line on your screen, it is such a pain. And this Touch ID fingerprint reader on the iPhone 6, and I presume on previous iPhones, I didn't really use it.
The 5S, yeah.
Is brilliant, and it reads so well. I found a couple of occasions my finger was a little wet, it objected, but for the most part, it works brilliantly, and you literally just hold it there for a quarter of a second and your phone unlocks. I also like the fact that you can use it to buy apps in the store.
Yes, yes, that's cool.
Just literally, you want to download this app, sure, just hold your fingerprint to the button on the iPhone, and it's a well-designed device. I thought I wouldn't like the size so much. I would have thought it was a bit small, but the increase in size from the previous version is actually good. It's a good size. It's 4.7 inches. I don't know, and I actually don't think I would get the big one, even though I'm a fan of big phones. Mainly because I think the bezel on the iPhone 6 Plus is too large.
Yeah, definitely. But also, the iPhone 6 Plus really is for those guys that don't have an iPad.
It is.
If you want one device that kind of caters to all your needs, and a lot of people have given me feedback to say that that's why they like the Plus, and they don't even pick up an iPad anymore because of it.
That's true. If you don't have an iPad, or you have an older iPad and you want to retire it, then the iPhone 6 Plus is worth considering.
Yeah, then you have best of both worlds.
I like the size. I like the size. Maybe it would be better if it was ever so slightly larger, maybe pushing 5-inch. But it's nice. And I love the fact that you can pull down the icons to reach them all with one finger.
Yeah, the little double tap on the
That's very cool. Siri's come a long way as well since I last played around with it.
I don't use Siri much, I must be honest with you.
I do. I used to use it once a day, every day, because I just simply say, Siri, wake me up at 7 tomorrow or whatever.
Oh, yes.
Because I'm too lazy to go into alarms and find alarms and all the rest of it.
Much quicker.
It's much quicker, yeah. I sometimes use it for the weather. I just say, Siri, what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? Or,
nice. I might actually do that.
I'm just catching up on old Big Bang Theories, by the way. It's a brilliant episode in season 5. I forget which episode. I think it was 10 or 11, somewhere around there, where the Indian guy in Big Bang Theory, what is his name? I forget now. Raj.
Yeah.
He falls in love with Siri. It's one of the best Big Bang Theories.
I'm going to look at that one. Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
But that's a great show, and I won't give away the last 30 seconds of that show because it's classic television.
What do you think of, and now that you're using, I mean, if you use the MacBook, the iPad, and your iPhone, those the features that allow you to pick up your phone calls. I do a lot of texting from my MacBook, because it's the same application. It sends from your phone essentially. I find those crossover features are quite nice. Continuity.
They're okay. They're not. I haven't used them extensively. The first time it happened, my iPad started ringing. I was like, what the hell's going on? Why is my iPad ringing? It doesn't even have a SIM card in it.
Yeah.
So that gave me a bit of a shock. But I must say, I haven't really used that. And I've been using a Mac for a while, but on desktop, on desktop or laptop rather, I'm really agnostic. I can switch between PC, Windows, and do.
If Google's your base for so many things,
I'm still product agnostic. I mean, I'm not going to rush out now. I really do like this iPhone 6, but I'm not going to rush out and just become an Apple only user.
Sure.
Vodacom is going to come and collect this review device probably next week sometime, and I'll go back to Android. Mm. But I'll continue using a mix and match of technologies. But I just think that I think that Apple had fallen behind a bit with its iPhones. I think particularly the iPhone 5S needed to be more innovative than it was, but I think they've really pulled out all the stops of this iPhone 6. They've made a great product. It's I've got the gold edition, which I also was a bit when I first read about it, I was a bit reluctant about it. I thought it's going to be a bit tacky, but the gold is actually a really nice color. It's not a cheap or a nasty gold. It's a high quality design, and I like it a lot. So, I think the Apple share price is going to keep going up this year.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
Anyway, with the helicopter coming overhead, this is the danger of recording outside as we do. It's time to wrap up the show. Richard, thanks for thanks for your time. And as always, if you've got any feedback on the show, send us an email. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, have a good 2015. Cheers.
Ciao.